Okay, last time we spoke about your property rights and what we would call ownership. What is ownership? It's being able to prove those property rights. That's all it is. It's a matter of proof. You know, I'm going to get into this in a minute, but the concept of ownership today is changing. It's changing before our very eyes because we do so much in the digital marketplace. But let's talk a little bit about what we talked last week on how you build that traditional level of proof to say, it's mine, I'm the owner. I can exercise all those property rights. E-point, exclude, possess, use, and transfer. What is the first and primary way? Sale. If you pay somebody for it, and they give you the item in return for that cash money, you can say, guess what, I bought it, here's the thing, here's the evidence of the money that went to the person who sold me the thing. That's the first and best way to prove that you're the owner, that you have all those property rights. The second issue is what we call occupancy or possession. The fact that you actually have that thing that you want to exercise those property rights on, in your dominion and control. It's yours, it's mine, I got it. The fact that you're driving the car, that you're using the computer, that football is in your hands, possession. The law says that possession is 9/10 of the law. Because if you have it, you can exercise those equipment rights over it. It's awful hard, even if you can show the other levels of ownership, if you don't have it in your possession. It's harder to prove. And remember, this is all about proof. The third topic we've talked about is adverse possession. You can prove it by the fact that somebody else can't. Adverse possession is all about the statute of limitations running. So if you actually take something from somebody and the statute of limitations has run for them to sue to get it back, guess what? They can't prove it's theirs. Why? Because they can't get in the courthouse door to show that you took it. Adverse possession is that way. We're going to get into that in length when we talk about real property, because there's all kinds of special rules when we talk about adversely possessing real property. With respect to personal property, movable property, that adverse possession is just that the statute of limitations to prove that you took it has run. So the person is barred from the courthouse door. Accession. That is when you take a raw element and add value to it. We talked about the clay being turned into bricks. Okay? The tree being turned into lumber. Something like that, you add value. And what we do and to demonstrate on that is the fact that if you intentionally take it, you have to provide the added value to the person you took it from. If you do not take it on purpose, it's an accident, you just have to return the raw materials. So if I take clay from your yard and I do it mistakenly, I didn't do it intentionally, I didn't know it was your yard, I just made a mistake, and I can show that, I just got to pay you for the clay. If you can show that I intentionally took it from your yard and I didn't care, I got to pay you for the value. Okay?
Confusion basically is when you mix things up. That's the issue of the haystack and the windstorm. You have a higher quality of wheat than I do, but it all gets mixed up in the windstorm. Unless you can identify the fact that this much of that wheat pile is yours, it gets out in the wash, so to speak, and it's the equal value of the two together. Now, obviously, if I sue you for something, a court can declare that it's yours. Just like if I buy it from you and I have that bill of sale. See, I paid you this money for this. I have documentary evidence to say it's mine. Well, the court rules that it's yours because you tell your story to a court, then you can document that as the proof that it's yours. Now, when you sue, remember there's three ways to sue. The first is replevin. That is, you have my thing and I want it back. That's an equitable remedy. I want that item. You took my cow. Then what if you did? I want the cow back. The second way is, because you took my cow doesn't love me anymore. It loves you instead. I feel jilted. I only want you to pay me the money that the cow is worth. That's an action in trespass. And the third thing is, I want both of them together. You took my cow. I want not only my cow back, but you've been milking my cow, and I want the value of the milk. That's together, that's an action of trover. Okay. Last we talked when property is lost, mislaid, and abandoned. Lost, mislaid, property are merged together today and we're under common law, so you don't need to know the distinction. It was one of intent. If I lose something I didn't know was gone, if I mislaid it, I put it in the wrong place. But don't worry about that. I'm just telling you, for the submarine students, and I all know that you are, they today are the same thing. If you lose property under $20, you have to make a reasonable attempt. If you find it, you find the owner, and if you don't find them within a reasonable period of time, it's yours. If, however, it's more than $20 in value, you got to turn it into the police. Depending on the value, there's a period of time that they hold it for, and after that period, it becomes yours. Okay? It's not just finders, keepers, losers, weepers. That's only in effect if it's under $20. Okay. Abandoned property, that's when the owner no longer wants it. It's a gift to the whole free world, and the first person to collect it and make it theirs becomes theirs. So that guy that took my barbecue grill and no longer has any eyebrows, I guarantee you can find him someplace. He's the guy running around without any eyebrows anymore, but when he lit the gas grill, it exploded in his face. Guess what? It's his now. His problem, his liability. Gift, we're going to talk about gifts tonight. That's the first thing we're going to talk about. Okay, let's transition into gifts. First and foremost, there's two types of gifts. There's gifts in revivals, gifts causa mortis. What is viva? Life. So a gift in revivals is a gift while you are alive. Okay? A gift causa mortis is a gift. You can't give something when you're dead. But a gift causa mortis is a gift when you're thinking about dying. I'm thinking about dying, and there's special rules for that.
That's a gift causa mortis. There's two types of gifts. Gifts in our Bibles. Think of all that crowd cheering Viva. That's life. Gift causa mortis is when you're thinking about God. Special rules, we'll get into them. Okay? Okay.
One of the special types of gifts, which is an inner vivos, is a gift in consideration of marriage. And we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Gifts inner vivos. Gifts causa mortis. To have a valid gift. I don't care which one it is, inner vivos or causa mortis, you need three things. The law is circumspect about gifts. Why do you think the law does not really acknowledge all gifts? Because everybody who's ever stolen something says, they gave it to me. So the law wants you to prove it was a gift. And how do you do that? These three things. IDA. Intent. Delivery, acceptance. So when you think of a gift, think of Aunt Ida. This is a lovely woman standing there. Makes great custard. She makes cookies. Lovely Aunt Ida. She represents intent, delivery, acceptance. Aunt Ida, she's a giving person. Intent, delivery, and acceptance. Aunt Ida. Those three things you have to have a gift. What do they mean? What is intent? You have to demonstrate that the person who gave you the gift intended to. If they wanted to give you that gift, it was purposeful. They weren't sleeping and you took it. Oh yeah, they really wanted me to have it. Well, that's nice. You show how they wanted to give it to you. You have to demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence. You have to show that they wanted to do it. As I said, the courts don't like claim gifts. Why? Because of the fact that everyone who steals says it was a gift. So the first thing you need is intent. I in Ida. Think of Aunt Ida. She's wonderful. Intent. The second thing is delivery. They have to give it to you. I had a wonderful grandma. She was the sweetest human being on planet Earth. Literally a saint. She was 4'11". Okay? Tiny little lady. Her name was Rose, just like you. Okay. Josephine Rose was a giving person. But she liked to give to everybody. More than once. She used to tell everyone, I would not engage in this behavior because I love my grandmother and I knew the people were taking advantage of her. She used to tell everybody, oh, all the stuff I have, just write a post-it note with your name on it, and after I die, it's all yours. I never did. I didn't want it. But my grandmother didn't want it to die. That's not a gift! Why? She never gave it to you. You may mark it out as your territory, but she didn't deliver it. In order to be a valid gift, that person has to physically deliver it to you. You have to be able to possess it. It has to be yours. That's what our case is about tonight. The delivery aspect. A simple promise is not a gift. You need intent. You need delivery. Physical delivery. Giving it from me to you. And lastly, acceptance. If someone walks up to you, Johnny, I got this wonderful vial of nuclear waste. I Okay? It's not a gift until he accepts it. Why? Nobody wants nuclear weapons. I don't want it. If all you needed was a gift to transfer possession is intent and delivery, you can really hurt people. Not a good idea. So not only do you need intent, not only do you need delivery, the nuclear waste issue, you need acceptance. All three elements. IDA. Intent, delivery, acceptance. Somebody tries to give you a vial of medical waste, you can say no. Okay? Those three things. Intent, delivery, and acceptance. Okay. I need all young ladies here in the room to do me a favor. Kindly put your hands over your ears. Okay? Please. Just for 30 seconds. All young men, there will come a time in your life. Hold on. There will come a time in your life, ladies, when you meet that wonderful lady and you want to spend the rest of your life with her. You will go out and buy her a lovely engagement ring and say, my darling, please spend the rest of your life with me. And you will give her that. Do not, on any circumstance, give it to her on Christmas or her birthday or Arbor Day or Columbus Day. Because if it's a gift in consideration of marriage, the marriage has to happen. If you give it to her on her birthday or Christmas, she doesn't have to give it back to you. Why? Because that ring was given as a birthday present, not as a gift in consideration of marriage. Okay. Gentlemen, please put your hands over your ears. Young ladies, there will come a point in your life when a charming young man will try to win your heart and say, here is a beautiful engagement ring. Please marry me and make me the happiest man in the world. Make sure he gives it to you on Christmas or your birthday or Arbor Day or some kind of holiday. That way you've got cool decides that he does not wish to get married, you get to keep the ring. And cash it in and get all the money from that pool. Okay! A gift in consideration of marriage in order to be valid. The marriage has to happen. So if you give that poster to that lovely couple, and it turns out that that marriage does not work out, they got to turn the toaster. They never do, but you can ask for that. Because the marriage has to happen. Okay? That's an added element for a gift in consideration of marriage. Okay? Okay. That is gifts in our Bibles. That's gifts during your lifetime. There's a second type of gift. Gifts causa mortis. That is when you are contemplating death. And you give something away during your lifetime while you're thinking about dying. So you go to the doctor and he says, Bob, I got good news and I got some bad news. The good news is you're not going to die today. The bad news is you're dying next week. You come out of the doctor's office and you're devastated. You say, oh dear, I don't know what to do. Would you like my car? I'm dying and I can't use it. I want some person to have plenty of it. Here's my car. And I hand deliver you the keys, I write over the title, and as I am doing it, I step off the curb because you now have my car, I got hit by a car.
Thank you.
Now, is that a gift of awareness? Yes, it is. Why? I thought I was going to die. I delivered the gift. What did I got? But you say, Bob, you didn't die what you thought you were going to die. I thought I was going to die of some horrible disease. The doctor knows it. And it turns out the doctor was completely wrong. He read another Bob Farley's x-rays, thought it was fine. I was going to live for a while longer. The fact is, if you think you're going to die, you deliver the gift, and you die. You do not have to die from the thing you thought you were going to die from, but you have to die. If I walk out and I didn't die, I could ask for my car back. Okay? Why? Because I didn't die. A gift, cause of mortis, three things have to happen, not just the IBA. Under all gifts, intent, delivery, acceptance has to happen. But you have to have additional qualifications for gift, cause, and mortis. First, you have to think you're going to die. Secondly, you have to deliver the gift. And third, you have to die. I cannot just meet two of those. I can't just think I'm going to die and not die. I can't just tell you, hey, you want my car and never give it to you. The IDA of intent, delivery, acceptance still got to happen. So I got to deliver the gift to you before I die. Once I'm dead, it's yours. The IDA still occurs. But the one tickle of all this is you do not have to die of the thing you're afraid of. You still have to die. Okay. Fraud is a very bad thing. Fraud and gifts run together sadly. People don't always tell the truth. Sad thing, but it's true. Fraud always cancels gifts. Fraud is a bad thing to commit. What fraud is an intentional misrepresentation of a material fact. It's essentially lying. Where you have fraud, it eviscerates the gift. Because it eviscerates the intent. Where you have fraud, no gift. Okay? Basically, because the IDA is not met. Okay? Okay. Any questions on gifts? Okay. We're going to go to bailments. I'm sorry?
What if the person, like, physically can't move the gift, so they tell you to pick it up from...
That can be a deliver. It doesn't say that they have to physically hand it. But if they allow you to remove it under their direction, that's fine. Or a good person, okay? They can turn around and say, Martha, give John the gift. Okay? And they can physically do it. As long as they intend for you to get it, and you get it in your hands with their presence and acceptance.
Yes. So, gifts of the mortis can be revoked before death, but not the
correct
lives.
Inner bios, yes. Once it's delivered, and you can show an intent and the acceptance, it's yours. Get it? With a gift cause of mortis, I'm giving it to you because I'm going to die, and I don't die, I can take it back if I choose. I can transform it if I'm going to think I'm going to die, and I give it to you, and I say, oh, what the heck? You can keep it. That's a gift. That becomes a gift in a virus. but it's still a gift causa mortis. I'm giving it to you because I think I'm not going to need my car because I'm going to be in room temperature. And it turns out that that doctor was wrong and I'm going to need my car. I can say, I want my car. Yeah. Yes? I'm sorry, Gavin, I'm deaf. I don't need you. Wills are a different instrument under the law by which you can give things to people after death. A will, which comes under the state powers and trust law, my dear friend Paul Morgan, any of you had Paul Morgan, raise your hand. Paul's a wonderful guy. I actually took a sister to the junior prom. Lovely meeting. We can get a second. Paul Morgan teaches a great course in wills, trusts, and estates. A gift under a will is not technically a gift. What we call it, advice or a request. Because you're actually giving that to somebody after you're dead by means of this instrument. A technical gift that we're talking about has to happen while you're alive. Okay? Okay. Now, number two, liens. That's my bad impersonation of lien. Okay. Liens are a security interest. Oh, bailments, I'm sorry. Let's go to bailments first. I thought we were doing liens first, hold on. Here we go. Okay, here we go. Liens. What's a lien? A lien is a security interest. It is a way that I have a security or an encumbrance upon the property in exchange for a debt to make sure you pay it. So if you take a loan on a car, I can take a lien on that car to make sure you pay me back that loan. Liens are for the and there's a lot in real property too. A mortgage is a lien. It is the right to encumber your rights in a property in return for security on a debt. It's a way to get payment back. And we'll go into the different kinds of liens. There's two real types of liens. There's a common law lien, which comes down from British common law, which is case law, which under custom they say if you do X service, you get to take a lien on the entity you're doing the service on. Those are things like mechanics liens. If I turn around and do work on your car, I can keep the car until you pay me. If I'm a plumber, I can keep some of the stuff that I'm using to make sure that your plumbing works until you do it. Okay? Certain mechanics get, if I do a gravestone, I keep the gravestone until you pay me. Okay? I keep possession in the thing until you pay me. The second class of liens are statutory. There's a New York State lien law, it's a statute, that says certain entities get to take liens. Okay? Now, there's certain people who can take liens, but they don't get to take the thing that you think so. Physicians can take liens, but they don't get to keep you. Okay? They can perhaps keep your medical records, but they don't get to keep you. Okay? So different liens allow for different securities and different items, and as a result of that, they're doing it so you pay the money back. Within those liens, there's two types. And it relates to what you get to keep as the lien holder. That's the person who does the work and wants payment. There's a general lien. That means I get to take a lien against all your property. That's a very select group of people who get a general lien. We'll get into that in a second, but it's generally people who cannot select the people they do work for. I'll give you an example. Hotels can't discriminate who stays in them. There's a series of laws that we passed, principally in the 1950s and 60s, where we tried to prevent discrimination because certain hotels were only serving certain people. As a society, we don't like that. It's wrong. Anybody presents themselves to a hotel should be able to get a room. Similarly, buses, airlines, anybody who's what we call a common carrier, they don't get to bar certain people. They don't get to do a credit check on you, whether or not you get on the bus. So as a result of that, they get general liens. So if you don't pay your hotel bill, they get to lock your room and keep whatever you got in there. Those people get what we call a general lien. But they're few and far removed. General liens are only for people who don't get to discriminate on who they're doing business with. They don't get to check your credit worthiness. They don't get to check on what type of person you are. All they can do is say, pay me or I'm going to take everything. The most common and only a small, tiny fraction of liens are general liens. 99% of liens are what we call special liens. That's where I get to determine whether I'm going to do business with you. If I give you a car loan, I get to do a credit check on you, right? To see if you're going to pay that back. As a result of that, I can only take a lien on the vehicle that you're taking the loan out to buy. If you get that vehicle, I don't get to keep whatever's in your glove compartment. If you have a whole bunch of gold bricks in the back seat, don't get to keep that. All I get to do is repossess the car. Why? That's what the securities are. With a car loan, I get to take the item back. Now, I can only take a lien on property that is the owner's. If, what's your name?
Dan.
I borrow your car. You're kind enough, my car's broken down, I said, can I borrow your car? Okay? You're kind enough to let me borrow your car. I'm driving your car and notice your brakes are kind of spongy. Okay? So I take it in. Tommy Hart is a mechanic. And I take it into your shop. And I say, my brakes are really bad. Can you please fix them? He does an outstanding job and presents me with a bill of $600, which is basically what a brake job. And I turn around and say, geez, that's an awful lot of money. No, it's not. And I don't pay you. Can you keep that car until I pay you? No. Why? Because I'm not the owner. Now, if Danny had brought you that car and said, do my great job, you could keep it until he made it. But because I'm not the owner of the car, I can't assess a lien on your car. Okay? I'm responsible to sue me, but you can't keep this car. Only the owner can give a lien. Okay? Okay. As we said, innkeepers and common carriers are the DSM. Get general liens. And they are given that right because they can't say who they're going to serve. So they can serve people who don't have any money, people who are sketchy, anybody, everybody. They serve as great people, they serve as not so great people. They don't have any recourse. Whereas if you give me a car loan, you can make me fill out a credit application. You can tell whether or not I'm a good risk. Innkeepers and common carriers can't. So in return for that, they are entitled to keep all the stuff. Unlike if I take a security lien in your car, again, I can't take anything in the car. I have to give that back to you. With respect to a common carrier or an innkeeper, I only have to give you everything back once you pay the bill. So if you have $100 million in your suitcase and you owe a $59 bill, I get to keep that suitcase till you pay me the $59, even though it's greatly in excess. Why? Because it's a common carrier. Yes. The problem is your friend has to pay the boot fee, because that's government, and they get to assess it because it's parked in the wrong place. And there's something in New York State known as the permissive use statute, which says if I give you my car and you do something wrong with it, such as park in a boot act, or you go into a school zone and go too fast and get a ticket, or you hit somebody with a car, they can sue the owner even though you were driving. Why? Because he permitted you to use the car. That's kind of an exception.
Certain statutory liens. Mechanics, we talked about that. That's the car service person. Hospitals. They basically take your medical record. They don't take you. No problem. They don't take you. But they can keep your medical records. They can withhold your knee replacement. You can't take it back. You can't flip it. They can't repossess your knee, but they can hold back certain treatments. Artisans, animal caretakers. Why? I don't know. The dog walker, the vet, they can keep your animal. You don't pay your vet boarding bill, they can keep Fido until you pay it. It's in the statute. That seems, they don't get to keep us when in the hospital, they get to keep our pet. Okay? Stone carvers. Why do you think stone carvers? When you carve something in stone, it's kind of permanent. Okay? They give them special treatment because once it's done, it's pretty much done. So they allow them to take a leave. Shipkeepers, that's a person who basically keeps your boat in a marina, and all creditors, they get statutory liens. Waiver of liens. A lien is a contract between you and the person you're giving the security to. I'm telling you, I want to borrow that money, and in return for that, I'm giving you that lien. It's your right to collect that money. But this is all a contract. So I can waive it by contract. I can modify it by contract. A contract can always be changed by the agreement of the parties together. I can also substitute other security. I got that suitcase with $100 million in that hotel room. I can say, hey, listen,
you know, how about I give you this suitcase instead of the suitcase with $100,000? If you both agree to that, I can substitute it. If Camyar doesn't charge $600, which is customary for that brake job, but you say, Danny, I take your car, take it into him, I want to do you a favor, he gives me a bill for $20,000. Okay? That's not how much a brake job you make. Somebody in your shop does. Hire that employee, sorry. It happens. Give me a bill for $20,000. No brake job costs $20,000. A demand for unlawful charges, which is highly in excess of what is customary, eviscerates the lien. They don't get to keep the car. Okay? Lastly, satisfaction. If I pay you that $59 that I owe on my hotel bill, you got to give me the suitcase with $100 million. Why? I satisfy the bill. Okay? When I pay off my car loan, you can't then come back and repossess my car. Why? I paid the loan off. So any of you who get a car loan, make sure the bank or whoever lends you the money sends you a satisfaction. You need to file that with the Department of Motor Vehicles. Okay, that's it for liens. Let's go into the last area, bailments. Okay. Bailments. What is a bailment? Bailment is a relationship created by the transfer of possession. It is not the transfer of title or ownership. It's only the transfer of possession. I essentially give you that product for a temporary basis. It's got to be personal property. I can't bail real property. And it's got to be for a purpose, usually safekeeping of the property. Okay? It's a contractual relationship created by the transfer of possession of personal property for a purpose. I like acronyms. They help you remember. All of those people are dressed in a dapper manner. Dapper is the acronym. Delivery, agreement, not acceptance, agreement, because it's a contract. It's got to be personal property. It's got to be for a purpose as entered into the for the benefit of one or both parties. As we said, there's no transfer of ownership, no transfer of title, and it is a contractual agreement. What is the most common bailment? Who here has seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Anybody? Do you remember he gives a very hot sports car over to the parking garage so they can go play with his friend in Chicago? Okay? That is a bailment. He gives the keys to the car to the parking garage and says, please save my car. Now those of you who've seen the movie know that they don't. They take the two guys who take the car, they get out on a joyride. Okay? Which is a no-no for the bailee. Okay? But they do. Okay? It's gotta involve a transfer of possession. So when you bring your car to the parking garage and you deliver the keys, not to a parking garage where you park it yourself, that's not a bailment. Okay? But if you turn over the keys and say, park my car,
That's a bailment. You're delivering the keys because you're delivering the possession of the car over to a person for safekeeping. Okay? That is number one. You got to transfer possession. Number two, you have to show that they demonstrate an intent to exercise control. The people who take it, take the car. Again, I can't bail you nuclear waste if you not take it. Okay? That's not fair. So as a result of that, they have to take it from you. They have to agree that they will take control of it. Okay?
You can't have a bailment unless the person who agrees to accept it consents. Okay? Okay. Now, obviously, a parking garage where you deliver control of the car is the most common bailment. Not the only one, but it's the most common. Do not confuse delivering the keys and control of the car through the garage with just parking it yourself in a parking garage. If you park it yourself, that is renting a space, not bailment. If they park it for you and keep the keys, it's a bailment. And that bailment means that they have to have a duty of care to protect your car. Okay?
The number one item, if I turn to you, I'm going to Antarctica. I'm actually heading. But I'm going to Antarctica, it's pretty cold there. And I don't want to bring my computer because it tends to freeze out in the cold. So I say, I don't need my computer when I'm in Antarctica. Will you take good care of my computer? Okay? That's a bailment. I deliver the computer over and you will take it. Now, if I turn to you and say, don't open it, don't use it, will you just do me this favor? That's a bailment from my benefit. You're getting no benefit. I'm asking you to do it as a favor. Okay? That's the lowest level of care. He's not getting paid. He's not getting any benefit. As a result of that, that's the lowest level of care. If you come to me and say, Bob, I hear you're going to Antarctica. You got a sweet computer. I really could use it. I hear you're just going to leave it home. Can I take care of your computer while you're away? I want to use it. I want to learn about it. Can I do it? I say yes. I don't charge you for that, I pay you, I give you the computer. That's a bailment for your benefit. I'm giving it to you and allowing you to use it and learn from it. That's for your benefit. That is the highest level of care. Okay? If I turn around and say I'm going to Antarctica, will you watch my computer? And by the way, you can use it. That's a different scenario than when you come to me and ask me. I'm asking you to take care of it. You're asking me to use it. That's for mutual benefit. That's the mid-level care. The level of care depends on whose benefit the bail is. If it's for yours, highest level of care. If it's for mine, who's giving it to you, lowest level of care. If it's for both of us, both win, so win-win situation, mid-level care. The level of care on a bailment is whose benefit it is for.
Now, bailments are not consignments. If I give you my computer and ask you to sell it for me,
that's not a bailment. Why? Every bailment has to end with re-delivery. You gotta give it back. You're gonna sell it, you intend to give it back? No, you intend to sell it. So as a result of that, that's not available. That's called consignment. Okay? If I sell it to you, it's not a bailment. Okay? Okay. Generally, a bailee, the person who's taking the item, is not entitled to use it unless the bailor, the person giving it to them, says you can. So unless I tell you use that computer, you can't. Now, there's a couple of exceptions. Instead of giving you a computer, I'm asking you to take care of my cow, Bessie. Okay? In order for cows to stay healthy, they have to be milked. You have to milk the cow when I give it to you. As a result, you get to use it. That's called implied use. If I turn to you and say, don't use my computer, but you can plug it in to recharge the battery so it doesn't get wiped out, you get to plug it in, so you get to use it to that extent. If I give you my keys and say, here's my car, please take it, you get to drive into the parking space that you're going to park at. That's called implied use. Going back to Ferris Bueller, you're not allowed to take it for a joyride. Okay? That's not implied use. You cannot use it if you are the bailee unless it's an agreed use. That means it's a use you and I agreed to. Okay? A bailee, the person to whom it's given, has an absolute, positive, without question, always indisputable, means you gotta do it, duty to re-deliver the item. You've gotta give it back. If you don't, it's called conversion. What's another name for conversion? You guys know? Theft. You stole it. Okay? You've got to give it back. A bailment's not a gift. You always, always, always have to give it back. And if you don't, for whatever reason, you are liable. Okay? You're also liable for a breach of a duty of care. Remember, the duty of care results from whose benefit it's for. If it is for your benefit as the bailee, you got to take really good care of it. And any breach of that, you're liable to the person who gives it. If it is for the bailor's benefit, you got to just use reasonable care. That's a much lower standard. And if something happens that's reasonable, your house burns down, well, guess what? You burn down, and you cause that, after the fire. That's not unreasonable, and as a result of that, it's the bailor who's going to lose. Okay? If you, however, decide that you're going to use it for a chalk for your truck wheel, and you run over the computer and break it, that's not reasonable. Guess what? You're going to have to buy a new computer.
Okay, how does a bailment end?
It always ends the same way. Redelivery. You give it back. Once you redeliver it, the bailment's over. Okay?
That conduct of the parties is when I give it back. We can agree to terminate it before that. If I come back from Antarctica earlier and say, can I have my computer back? Unless I agreed for a specific period of time to have you keep it, guess what? You got to give it back. Okay. Why don't we take a 5-minute break and come back and do our case? Hiya. I didn't get my name for
What's your name?
David.
David what?
Ramirez.
Okay. Gotcha.
Cool. Thank you.
Good to go.
Hello.
I came 1 minute after you called my name.
Okay. What's your name?
Stan Jackson.
I did call you, dude.
Mm-hmm. I came 1 minute after they told me you had just called my name.
Okay. There you are.
That's me. Thank you.
Thank you, dear. Hi.
Hi. Sorry, my last class is something we're kind of getting from the midway, so it's kind of a midterm kind of thing.
What's your name?
Me afterwards. Okay. OG. OG the Abuji.
What's your last name?
OG the Dash.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha, Zena. Thank you.
Can I have a question?
Yep.
So,
hopefully I'll have an answer.
Okay. So I read more about this that we went over in class or shit right now. But so with the beginning, how. I'm horrible things Ferris's best friend.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yeah.
Yes.
His best friend?
Yes.
The med six no, get up, and they end up getting up and they take. And then the father, he'd been picking up this car and left the car with the keys at home. But the kind of the incidental use, so they end up taking it because the keys were left there.
Well, so that's a different issue because they basically took the. That was not.
And then
the bailment was them giving it to the garage.
Okay.
Okay. But you're assuming that they had the right to bail it, which I'm making a big assumption.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't because they literally stole the father's car.
Right.
But at the end of the day, that's not a bailment.
Okay.
You don't have the right to use it.
I'm looking at the other perspective with the other thing and just wondering how that would work. So let's say he's at home. Well, that gets more or less kind of stolen.
Well, I'll give
you. It's kind of misdelivery what happened at the end. They brought it back, but then.
Well, they didn't. He didn't bail it to him because of
bail.
Remember, a bailment's an agreement, and the father never wanted to agree with the other. Okay, but if I agree with you and take the car, you are entitled to incidental uses. Okay, I'll give you an example. I'm entitled to park the car in the parking lot. Okay, let's say all of a sudden there's drips from the ceiling. I'm entitled to pick another spot. Okay, that's it.
Okay. And so Ferris just said, park cars that take care of it, so that's where they kind of
Once he delivers the keys, that's available.
Okay.
Assuming he has the legal right.
If he had the legal right, if he had said, park the car, rather than what he had said, then the guys would have been even more helpful.
Took his car on a joyride, were ineligible to do that, so they violated the bailment.
Would it be even more hot water if Ferris is more direct instead of parking the car rather than the
I don't think they needed to be more direct because once they deliver the keys at the purpose of the parking garage, they don't have the right to drive except in the parking spot.
And who has the highest level of care is owed when somebody else wants to borrow something?
For your benefit. For the benefit of
the bailee.
The bailee.
Okay.
That's the highest level. If it's for the bailor, the lowest level.
Okay.
And if it's
for
both of us, okay?
Thank you very much.
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just the attendant.
What's your name?
Simone.
What's your last name?
Bejan. B-E-J-E-N.
Okay. Gotcha.
Oh, and can I have last week's,
It's on the internet, sweetie.
Oh,
just hop online, you can get it.
Right.
I forgot the name.
What's your name?
Jerry.
Yep. I got you.
No, okay.
Oh, that's
right. Yeah. Really.
Gotcha.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Who wants to be an Eagle stepmother? It's a great part. Get a play blue. Who wants to do it? Anybody want to be mean? Just for 30 seconds. Any lady? Okay. You want to be mean? What? Yeah, me.
got you because you look like the star.
60s, there wasn't that level of force, but sadly there's
recently. So you tried to do anything you could to rebuild your kids' lives, make them love you, gave them all kinds of gifts, took them to the park, bought them ice cream. He obviously grew. You took your young son, and he was going to have his 21st birthday. Feeling rather sad because mom and dad are no longer married, and he married this very attractive woman who's not your mother, so you're feeling that. You are in college, living away from home as most college students do. So dad wanted to make this a special birthday. You love your son. You really do. Lots and lots. So you said, I want to make this 21st birthday one he'll never forget. You have homes in New York. You have a home on the beach in Los Angeles. Okay? Really, and your homes are spectacular because what do you do for a living? You're an architect. You design them all yourself. The one in Los Angeles is all glass. It looks over the ocean. It's really beautiful. And of course, you have a room there because you're the campers. On one of your trips together, you go to art museums. You like watching paint dry for me, but you like it because you live in different circles. He's really rich. He used to like to go to baseball games. He goes to art. Okay, everybody, whatever floats you. And in one of the art museums, you see the Schlosskammer 2. What I happen to think is one of the ugliest paintings I've ever seen, but you love it! It moves you! And you tell your father, isn't that a magnificent painting? In 1968, it's worth $2.5 million. That's a lot of bananas in 1968. A lot of money today. But you tell your dad how much you love it. So he remembers that conversation and says, how, God bless you. He says, how can I get my son to really love me? I'll buy him that painting he really loves. So you take that jet across the pond, go to that art museum in France, even though it's a German painting, and you buy it from the art dealer who's displaying it in the French Museum. Okay? You bring it home and hang it on the wall of his bedroom. And you write a letter. Dear son, because I love you so much, you are my boy. I am going to give you that painting you love. I went out and bought the Schlosskammer 2, and it's hanging on the wall of your bed. Now you know, like most of us know, it's really not appropriate to hang on the wall in your dorm room. Okay? $2.5 million painting is not really good for Animal House. Just tell me, I live here in the dorms in the Albany. Really not a great place for $2.5 million painting. Okay? Even in 1968, maybe especially in 1968. So you're all good with the fact that it's hanging on the wall in your bedroom. Okay? Now, stand up. You are Victor's tax accountant. He's happening to tell you one day how he wrote to his son after he bought him this, kind of bragging, okay? This is how much I love my boy. He loved this painting, and I hung it on the wall in his bedroom. It's his painting forever, and I wrote him a letter saying that it's his. Only one problem, you say, dear Victor. There is something called a gift tax. You don't want to pay that gift tax. You get what is called a step-up in basis when you die. So
don't worry about it. You just write them back and say, hey, son, ignore that letter, rip it up, and then you tell him privately, and by the way, this is telling him to commit fraud. But you say, you tell him privately that, hey, the painting's really yours, don't ignore it, ignore the second letter, but that way I don't have to pay to get a tax. So what does father do? He follows his tax accountant, fraudulent advice, and he writes the son a second letter, ignore the first one, wink, wink, I don't want to pay the gift tax. He tells you orally on the phone, hey, the painting's on the wall, it's yours, don't pay, you know, this is accountant stuff, don't worry, it's your painting. Okay? It's still on your wall. You listen to that. Okay. Now, sadly, Victor, you can now go sit down because you're down. Now, you will step up, come forward. Evil stepmother gets all of her husband's estate because he doesn't play well with the first wife, and everything he has goes to her, except for some specific requests that he puts in trust in. One thing that doesn't get mentioned in the will is Schloss Kammer 2. Where is Schloss Kammer 2 hanging? Yeah, but where? In your house. It's now her house. She says, you ever see that commercial with McDonald's coffee? My car, my dollar. My house, my baby. Remember, and I know what is the deed. Delivery. He never delivered that baby. That's not his house. He lives there, but it's not his house. Is he on the deed? He's not on the deed. Is he in the will for the house? No. Goes to you. He says, but it's mine. Dad bought it for me. What? Doesn't know me. I got this letter saying that you wanted me to have it. You produced the letter saying, I never meant that. So what happens? You two sue each other. The Gruen v. Gruen is not the father against the wife. It's the stepmother against the son. You are the evil stepmother against the son, saying you did not deliver that baby. You vote and go sit down. You're in a litigation. And Judge Wachler, you come forward. This is Judge Wachler. He is the chief judge of the New York State Court of Appeals. Back when he was chief judge, that's an elected position. He has to run for that, and you're elected statewide for that judgeship. He's a brilliant judge. But judges, as much as being good lawyers, particularly when you get to that one, are also human beings. Okay? For good and for bad. You're not dispassionate. You have opinions on people. And guess what? Your court really doesn't like the evil stepmother. She is not a nice lady. You see her in court. She's trying to take away a painting given from the father to the son when she got $80 million in the estate. She's trying to take that $2 million gift, she's borrowing money,
what? She got 80 million. And she's trying to take your 2 million too. Can somebody say oink? That's the noise that the pigs make. Okay? What is the first thing any judge tries to do? Any good? They want to carry out justice. Now, could you have said that Payne never got delivered? He doesn't have it in his sole possession. And isn't delivery being in the sole possession? Isn't that what means to deliver something? You take possession of it. Yes. But guess what? The Court of Appeals that really doesn't like that people's stepmother. They didn't like that people's stepmother. They said it was delivered. How did they ever get to that conclusion? They said IDA was satisfied. What did you say, Judge Walker? He's a 21-year-old kid in college. He doesn't own his own home. He's in college. He lives with his parents. His father did what any parent would do. They put it in his bedroom where he lived. You found that to be adequate, safe delivery. If he'd given it to him in his dorm room, he would have got trashed. It's a $2 million thing. He's put it in his bedroom. You say, my house. The judge said, not at the time he put it there. It's his room. He's entitled to it, and that's the best way the father could deliver. This case could have gone either way. And one of the reasons I show it is because judges are human beings. They just don't look at the law the whole time. They'll use the law to come up with what they think is justice. They say, she got $80 million. She shouldn't be ripping you off for two. And the fact that the father's tax attorney, because you commented on this, the tax accountant tries to commit fraud, there wasn't anything you did. You didn't tell him about that. And you testified, as incidentally did your original book, that you wanted that painting, that the husband, former husband, wanted to give it to you, and all of that tax stuff was a ruse. To add insult to injury, they made you pay the tax out of the $80 million. See you next week.